Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. We have a quorum as present. A couple bills up today, and we will first start with the approval of the minutes for March 10th, 2025. Vice Chair Myers, can you move the minutes? Have you had a chance to review them?
I've had a chance to review them. I moved the minutes.
The minutes have been moved. Any questions or all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion prevails. Minutes are approved. We will start with House File 1722. I will move House File 1722 to the Ways and Means Committee. Chair Davids, welcome to our committee. It was a pleasure to be in yours this morning. And introduce yourself and Representative Hicks, and then proceed with your testimony. And thank you for being here with us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1722 is to name a stretch of highway in Maurer County, the Officer Jason B. Meyer Memorial Highway. It's about a 4.5-mile stretch from the city of Racine to the intersection of Highway 16 and 63. I am very honored to have Sarah Meyer Westfall with us here today, who will go over what exactly happened here. But before that, I'd like to turn it over to Representative Hicks for a few comments.
Representative Hicks, welcome to the committee. For the record, just state who you are for your
Representative
voice.
Representative Kim Hicks.
And then proceed with sharing your testimony.
Thank you. I want to thank Chair Davids for authoring this bill and really supporting my dear friend Sarah. I was just a child when Jason passed, but I've known Sarah for a long time, and I know how traumatic and how meaningful this experience has been. And I want to make sure that we're honoring the memory of that of him and honoring Sarah and her family at the same time. So I will let her share their story.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Ms. Myers Westfall, welcome to the committee. Make sure you pull that microphone towards you and speak right into it so we can hear your testimony.
How
and
is that? Pull it
close. Perfect.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Right. So then just state your name for the record. It's being recorded and that, so preserve that and then proceed with your testimony. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. I am, my legal name is Sarah Westfall, but nobody knows me as Sarah Westfall when I'm doing anything with Jason's memory. And so I just say I'm Sarah Meyer Westfall because that's who I've always been. So anyway, good afternoon. I am Sarah Meyer Westfall. My first husband is Officer Jason Meyer of the Grand Meadow Police Department. He died in the line of duty September 6th, 1999. Thank you so much for your time. I'm here to formally request the stretch of 16 and 63 to be designated as the Officer Jason Brent Meyer Memorial Highway. Thank you, Representative Greg Davids and Representative Kim Hicks, for all your help to bring this bill to fruition. I will keep this short and sweet, as I know exactly how busy you guys are. And if you have any questions, please let me know. As I mentioned earlier, I am Sarah Westfall. My first husband is Officer Jason Meyer of the Grand Meadow Police Department. He died in the line of duty in a one-car accident while responding to a suspicious person call in Racine. Because it was my way home, I was one of the first persons on the scene. Grand Meadow Police, Fire, Ambulance, Spring Valley Fire and Ambulance, Maurer County Sheriff's Office, State Patrol, Mayo One, and St. Mary's all tried their best, but it wasn't to be. I had, tragically, Jason died. We were all absolutely devastated. And I just lost my soulmate. In the days following his law enforcement funeral, our family, friends, Jason's coworkers, along with myself, decided to adopt the two-mile stretch of Highway 63, starting at the intersection of 16 and 63, which is near the accident scene, going north 2 miles towards Racine. We have adopted that stretch of highway since 1999. This spring, we will begin our 26th year of keeping those ditches clean. Why this stretch of highway is meaningful, and why do I feel this stretch of 63 should be honored in Jason's name? Jason made the ultimate sacrifice to protect his community and his state. I feel such a tremendous sacrifice is deserving of this honor. This stretch of 63 is right in between Spring Valley and Grand Meadow, and it heads north to Racine. Obviously, Racine was the, that was where the call was, that where Jason was heading when he was killed. Jason and his immediate and extended family are lifelong residents of Spring Valley. Spring Valley is where Jason and I created our busy, happy life together. And tragically, I buried Jason on our fifth anniversary. Grand Meadow, the other piece to this is that it is between Spring Valley and Grand Meadow. And Grand Meadow is where he was a police officer. Grand Meadow is where he loved being a police officer there. He couldn't get enough. And it was actually wonderful being a part of seeing his dream become a reality. Grand Meadow is where I built my home and where I rebuilt my shattered life. While I grew up on a farm near Glenville and Lyle, Grand Meadow has been my home for the last 25 years, and in the future with my life that I've created. With this bill to make the section of Highway 63, the Officer Jason B. Meyer Memorial Highway, I have the full support of the Grand Meadow Police Chief and the Police Department, the community, and of course our family and friends. The Grand Meadow Police Chief, Jim Richardson, tried his best to join us today, but he had prior commitments that he was not able to reschedule. He tried his best. I know that he did, because he always does everything for me. He's a good guy. Anyway, please consider passing this bill to make this section. Jason made the ultimate sacrifice to and is deserving of this honor, and having his memory enshrined by naming the 63 Officer Jason B. Meyer Memorial Highway is exactly what he would deserve.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer-Westfall. There are no amendments. Any other comments from the authors, either of the authors? Is there any?
And, I really appreciate the witness here. And just one side note here, the funds have been raised. As the state law says at this point, and so we're good on that account.
I appreciate that, Chair Davids. Is there any other public testimony? I don't think there is. Any member questions? I don't see any. Well, Representative Berg, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for coming and telling your story. It's not an easy thing to do. I think this is one of those really beautiful moments where we all get to vote on something based on our humanity. And thank you for allowing us to do that. I can't wait to vote yes on this.
Thank you. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, along with his family.
Thank you for sharing with us and bringing the bill forward. We do appreciate the service, and this would be a great acknowledgement of that service and your service to your community as well as a spouse. We will see no other public testimony or comment. Any closing comments to either the representatives or authors?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, we'd really appreciate your support for House File 1722.
Thank you, Chair Davids. We will just take a voice vote. All those in favor of moving House File, or I will renew the motion for you, House File 1722 to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, in relation to the following bill, House File 747 on the same topic, 748, I'm sorry, that is a bill that I'm authoring. We will do a presentation by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, the Greenhouse Gas Impact Mitigation Assessment. Give you a little bit to set up. Will there be, are you putting the slides on the camera or two, or the TVs? Or?
Yes, we have a presentation, okay. Mr. Chair.
All right, we got video up on the screen. Members, as was promised to the committee by Representative Allen when he had his bill hearing, he graciously has brought us some treats or snacks. If you want to pass those out while we're doing the presentation. And with us, we have John Soberg, Minnesota Department of Transportation Sustainability Planning and Management, and Chris Behrens, also with MnDOT, the Greenhouse Gas Impact Assessment Director. I probably just introduced you for the record, but please introduce yourself for the record. Thank you for being with us, making time to help us understand the subject matter, and then just proceed with your presentation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and members, we'll, there's a few slides we'll go through, and then if you want to hold your questions until after the presentation, that would be appreciated. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, again for introductions. My name is John Soberg. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Sustainability Planning and Program Management at the Department of Transportation. And joining me today?
Chris Behrens with MnDOT's Sustainability Division and working as a Program Director for implementation of the legislature's assessment.
Okay, if there's any more cookie containers that need to be opened, let's do it now. All right, and then make sure that you speak in, Mr. Solberg, we can hear you pretty good. Mr. Behrens, if you could just pull it a little closer when you speak, that would be appreciated. So please proceed.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the opportunity to come before the Transportation Committee today to give an overview of the greenhouse gas impact mitigation assessment and the processes we've been engaging in over the last year as part of this process. So maybe I'll first start with a little background on where this essentially came from. So back in 2007, Governor Pawlenty and the legislature adopted the Next Generation Energy Act, which required reductions in carbon emissions throughout various sectors in Minnesota. And so I'll refer to this slide, as you can see, as just a graphic to represent some of those pieces. Transportation, since 2005, has seen a 6% reduction in carbon emissions during that time period. And transportation, the main factors that really contribute to those emissions are really fuel types. So what is that power mode? And transportation options, those are the main elements under the Department of Transportation, or really transportation in general, in which emissions can be controlled. The one thing I'd like to reference to on this particular slide is you'll notice the varying degrees of which emissions are moving or changing in each sector. transportation continues, while reducing slightly, still continues to be the number one emitter of carbon emissions in Minnesota. On to the next slide. So a couple things I'd like to bring to your attention then as well is, so kind of following through an understanding of where this came from. So in 2003, the legislature initially passed the greenhouse gas assessment process that required the department to assess highway capacity expansion. And then additionally, during that time period, created a technical working group that was managed by the Department of Transportation. There's some members of that working group that are in attendance today in the audience. As part of that working group, their task was to evaluate what improvements could be made on an initial legislation that was passed in 2023. So by February of 24, they had to have a report, which was provided to the legislature, that was provided to members of this committee, in order to make any additional improvements that could be made. At the end of the 2024 session, legislation passed that added just a couple of things to that and clarified some components in the assessment process. Number one, that there should be a technical advisory committee that advises the commissioner on this process as it's developed, rather than leaving this wholly within the department to administer. Two, that technical committee would be made up of various experts from within different groups with expertise. And then third, that 2025 should be that start date for emissions for two components. Actually, let me back that up. February 2025 would be a deadline for new projects that expand the transportation system. And I'll go into that definition. But new projects would have to go through a greenhouse gas VMT assessment process and would have to provide mitigation for those. The second part that came out of the 2024 legislation was really the big piece of work that came out of the work group, which was that the transportation should move away from eventually this project-by-project evaluation into a program evaluation, knowing that the program evaluation wasn't ready to move forward yet. There's a lot of work that has to go into that. But in the meantime, that a single project could provide mitigation. So if we go on to the next one. So I mentioned a little bit before that the TAC was established as part of that 2024 legislation. And you can see here who members, where those members come from. Number one, we have a city and county, city engineer and a county engineer as part of that committee. And it was really instrumental to have practitioners involved in this process, to understand how does this take place on the ground when you're developing projects. The Pollution Control Agency, Metropolitan Council, Greater Minnesota Planning Organization, so that's East Grand Forks MPO representative, to understand in a smaller environment what these sorts of impacts mean. And that, again, was a really critical piece to understanding, well, there may be tools and systems available in larger metropolitan areas. We need to understand what's going on in these smaller communities. And then we have some national experts, one from Rutgers University, to help us understand the latest in modeling, active transportation expert from Tool Design as a representative to help us understand what those components of this mitigation process were and what those benefits might be. So then I'll move on here a little bit to what needs to be assessed. So I mentioned expansion, but I didn't go into that in any great detail. So expansion, as defined by the legislation, is now any lane addition of 2,500 feet or longer, and any new grade separation for vehicles. So those are the two components that we're really focused on in this particular legislation. And so that goes back to when or what does that need to be assessed. So that's starting in 2025, February of this year, so approximately a little over a month ago. And for the committee's understanding, right now we have no projects that are undergoing that assessment process. We've looked to what are the solicitations, the federal solicitations that are currently on hold, but are there any that would be affected by this? And currently there are none. However, we do realize that in the near future that that possibility could be moved forward with either federal or regional solicitations or other programs that might be coming our way to support expansion of the system either through a lane capacity or new interchange. So the second part that I mentioned a little bit earlier is the expansion of this process to really involve the program. I know there's been some confusion or potentially questions regarding what is portfolio. I have to even ask sometimes because I don't think about it that way. So we're really looking at that as what is MnDOT's program? That's what we mean by portfolio of projects. So it's really limited, again, to this process of trunk highway. Again, this isn't for all roads everywhere. This is improvements on the trunk highway. So therefore, the program or the portfolio is limited to trunk highway expansion projects. So in order to make that work, one of the pieces that we worked with some of the folks that were behind the scenes on this is understanding how could we move forward assessing a program. And as you can see on the slide in front of you, that process starts in August of 2027. And for those of you that know what the state transportation system is, we have already programmed those projects. And in order to avoid throwing any sort of confusion into the process, what we came around to is that that process would start for projects coming into the program in 2027, therefore affecting projects starting in 2031. That way those projects could have ample time to plan and identify potential mitigation. As a department, we could have ample time to develop the tools that we would need in order to evaluate the entire program as well. So maybe here the meat and potatoes and everybody is probably thinking about, and that is, well, how do you do this assessment? And I'm just going to give a broad overview. And again, Chris is here for any specifics on the technical details of the assessment process as he's been leading that. So step one is really to determine, number one, does it meet that criteria of a lane addition more than 2,500 feet, or is it a new interchange? Now, for reference, we've gone through our program just to identify what is that number for relative understanding impact in the state. And typically, those are between 3 and 6 projects a year. Sometimes it can be less. Sometimes it can be more. I would say, again, like I mentioned earlier, some of these projects come through corridors of commerce. Some of them are federal solicitations. Some of them are even within the state or National Highway Freight Program that would fund some of these projects. The second phase is that the projects that they are doing the assessment, and I'll just say from that standpoint, that assessment really goes back to some I would say very scientific processes that are not easily defined just simply here, but we could give more detail on that if there are questions arise. But that process looks at not only the existing VMT or vehicle miles traveled based on cars that are already traveling on the corridor, but then applies a national or a federal emission standard, because believe it or not, the federal government knows exactly what our car makeup is here in Minnesota and can tell you what the emissions are. And so we can apply that factor to our projects. And so you add those two pieces together and then you start to see what your emissions are over the 20 years. And then the third step really is getting into the projects that need any offset or increases in that emissions to VMT. Have to offset those emissions in VMT. And we have several ways that were identified in the legislation to do that. First and foremost, I'll just categorize that we have also done a lot of work with other states and internally to understand how could you evaluate a non-motorized improvement or transit improvements for reductions in greenhouse gas VMTs to understand what that means. And those are, highly regarded as being reliable and continue to show and be able to develop that. I'll just say one of the pieces, and we can go to the next slide as I finish this off. I'll talk about it when we get to the next slide here on offsets specifically. You can slide. So I'll go into that. Now, the question is regarding the assessment, who's responsible? And this slide, what I'd like to clarify is that the statute required that the assessment take place for a potential project, and I say potential because it has not entered a STIP or a TIP to program that project, that the assessment take place before that process starts. So the MPOs in the state of Minnesota, as you can see on the map, each of them would have to evaluate that expansion project, and MnDOT would be evaluating that project everywhere else in the state. All right, so that's the who's evaluating. That is in cooperation with the project proposer, and we have a couple different ways that we can do that. But so what I wanted to make sure is that people understand it's required to enter the STIP and it's required to enter the TIP as well. And those two documents by federal law have to effectively match. So a TIP project cannot be entered into the TIP without the STIP moving forward, and it cannot be entered into the STIP without being in the TIP. All right, so going on to that next piece, after you've done the evaluation, I talked a little bit earlier about offsets. So the offsets, there were nine that were identified in legislation. One thing that is really key to this process, though, is that the legislature did give authority to the Commissioner of Transportation to identify additional offsets. And I think this is really critical because this is a growing area in transportation. We don't know what all the various new technologies that might come online or new processes. So that allowed for the TAC to be able to review any potential projects to make sure that they're meeting the targets and to recommend new offsets if a project proposer would bring something to that committee. So as you can see, there's nine different offsets there, but I want to call out the fact that two of those are really policy kind of level offsets, and then the rest are really infrastructure or systems that could be built or planted or those sorts of things. And so that's, again, critical because it gives project proposers really flexibility to fit what makes sense in their community. And that's really the way that the TAC has been viewing this as we develop the process further for the state. Next slide. So, and then I really just want to finish up with this slide, which is really in part to summarize the fact that the state within the last year has utilized the tools that the legislature gave to it by establishing a TAC with various experts that can help make this a reliable, repeatable, and defensible process. That's key. As transportation developers, we want to make sure that when money is appropriated for a project, that that project can move forward, that it isn't subject to being arbitrary or having some process that isn't defensible. And that's really key piece of the members that made up the committee. But typically, on this slide, what I want to hit on is the fact that traditionally, the major reasons for expansion in Minnesota have really focused around these areas of safety and economic development. As part of this process, we are involving kind of that environmental health side. And that isn't arbitrary in its own right, because those of you familiar with State Statute 17401, which defines the goals for transportation, understand that one of those goals is a reduction of greenhouse gas. And this legislation is able to put the department in a position to be able to try and meet that goal. And with that, I or Chris would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Solberg and Mr. Behrens. I want to quickly shout out to the let the committee know, you know, when the chair has a bill in front of him or her, sometimes they bring a team with them. And so I would like to just acknowledge that it is Hospitality Day here at the Capitol, and I'm honored to have a team from Lakeville's Convention and Visitors Bureau here. They actually employed my daughter at Rudy's Red Eye, and a couple of the other members I think are here. So I'm going to embarrass them and just have them stand up to acknowledge that they're sitting through a committee just on their day to the Capitol. So thank you for being here, folks. Okay, we'll go to some member questions. Representative Joy, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the testifiers. On slide two, it talked about electricity generation, and then it has Minnesota generated and imported. What's the imported part of that? Is that, can you explain what that is?
Mr. Solberg?
Mr. Chair, committee members, so the imported, I don't know, I'll fuddle my way through this, but after talking with some of our rural cooperatives, a lot of our energy is imported from North Dakota. And so there's an element of where that energy comes from that is involved in this process. And that these are evaluated through MPCA, so I'm not the expert in it, but that's my knowledge of it.
Okay. Representative Joy, follow-up?
I guess the follow-up would be is, my question would be is, on the left we're talking about emissions and CO2 and the tons and what it does, and it's scaling it over to it. So I was just kind of curious if the imported is like the CO2 that's coming in from somewhere else, or how they're gauging that, or how are we coming up? You know, I'm very aware. I matter of fact, sit on an electric board that imports power into Minnesota, so I'm familiar with that. But I'm just curious how you would gauge like imported CO2 or carbon in the air, whether it's blown from the western North Dakota or it's blown from Wisconsin or wherever it comes from. I'm curious what that is.
Yeah, Mr. Solberg, you can maybe follow up with us. That's probably a little bit outside the purview of this committee, the Energy Committee. But on that note, I am curious if you could expound a little bit more. When I saw this slide last night, I was actually surprised that there was a 6% drop in carbon emissions in transportation. Can you shed a little bit more light on that? I think I might know the answer, but why are we reducing carbon emissions already? How are we achieving that reduction?
Chair, representatives, the reductions that we have seen have come from greater fuel efficiency since the Next Gen Energy Act came into effect, and also kind of that transition that's taking place around electrification of vehicles. Those are the primary drivers. It has been somewhat offset, though, by the increases in VMT.
Excellent. Thank you. Representative Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want us to start to help answer a question for Mr. Joy. I actually used to help develop greenhouse gas emissions inventories. And so when it comes to the electrical side, we look at the generation sources and make calculations from there. So we just look at the power plants from which the power is coming from and make those calculations. So we're not trying to actually measure carbon in the air directly. To the testifiers, thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited to be able to hear your presentation heard your presentation and talk about this. You mentioned that the main drivers for expansion are safety and economic development. I'm wondering, on the safety side, if you can help me understand, are there any safety situations in which just slowing down vehicles would help ameliorate that situation?
Mr. Solberg or Mr. Burns?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understand Representative Jones, your question just simply is driving at a slower speed increase safety. That is one factor that can increase safety. There are, and I think we have a lot of engineers, I think, in the room today, but there are all sorts of causational relationships beyond just that. You design standards, there's speed, there's visibility, there's impairment, there's so, right, just one of many causational factors.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I really think that's important because we know that speed increases likelihood of injury and death kind of exponentially. And so it's important to note that how big of a factor that really is for this goal.
We have Representative Cagle and Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just kind of curious, testifiers, what's the goal for MnDOT on greenhouse gas reductions?
The goal?
Mr. Burns.
Chair, Representative, the goal would be the state statute on transitioning the transportation sector to net zero by 2050.
Representative Cagle?
That's my question.
Is that goal, I know it's in statute, is it attainable? Is it kind of in the sky, you know, lofty goal, or is this something we can get to?
Chair, representatives, as you can see on the slide that's held up right now, it depends significantly on the sector. There are a number of sectors that a decade ago were making little to no progress. But now, like the electricity generation sector is making quite significant strides and is on a pretty significant trajectory towards reducing emissions. As it relates to the transportation sector, our analysis and modeling would suggest that we are not on a path to get to net zero.
I will go at that. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about just the cost. Has anything been done yet about that? Because I know this is going to, you know, looking at how much extra cost this is going to add as we attempt to make a road safer or add lane miles where it's needed. So thank you.
Mr. Solberg, are you taking this one?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yes, that's a good question regarding this whole process. One of the things that I think has repeatedly come up from not only internally in the TAC, but a lot of our partners in transportation is what is the cost. And so during this last year and developing the assessment process and developing the mitigation and what some of those components are, one of the things we have now come to understand is the relative cost of this mitigation. So for simplicity terms, we're talking generally between 5% and 30% of a project construction cost would be the additional cost to developing transportation expansion project. Now, that is a little bit too simple because depending upon the location, it could be smaller or depending upon the tools you use. So, talked a little bit earlier about the kind of the policy levers that could be pulled to reduce some of those emissions, and then there's the infrastructure. So the policy levers just independently from a capital cost, right? They don't necessarily have a capital cost, but can make significant changes in what those future emissions would be. Thinking about a community that may be looking to expand 20 acres of housing, and by simply moving that from, say, a single-family density to multifamily, those sorts of pieces start to come together. But then also adding the other tools, the capital costs of sidewalks or multi-use trails, you can further enhance that. The other piece that we're starting to see as a result of this work is that in our rural areas, that's probably going to be a much smaller, towards the lower end of that scale, in part, because the emissions are directly tied to vehicles and vehicles tied to the number of people that travel those roads, you would see in rural areas that that would be a lower number that they would have to offset.
Representative Anderson?
Yeah, thank you. So it's project by project. And isn't there something in here about it doesn't have to be on that exact site. It can be somewhere else. So some of the But generally, it's 5 to 30%. We're increasing the cost of construction, right? So, is that correct?
Either of our both presenters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Yes. So, the legislature, in the process of developing this, did lay out a process in which the mitigation takes place, or where it takes place. So, you would start in the immediate community, broaden that to environmental justice areas, and then broaden it out from there to include statewide. So that's for location, but generally for an individual project, we would expect that cost to range anywhere from 5 to 30%.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. How do you quantify that, the increase in the cost there? I've heard estimates as high as 50%.
Chair, representatives, the primary methodology that we have been using is carbon emissions tool that we developed a couple of years ago that uses the latest research on, you know, what happens if you do X, Y, and Z. Folks are probably familiar with crash modification factors and the research and update approach tied to crash modification factors. What does the best research say happens if you install cable median barrier, and then we apply crash modification factors? That is a similar thing that is happening within the emissions analysis space, and what happens if you install protected bike lanes, make transit improvements, what kind of emissions outcomes do you see from those investments? And we are using both the latest research and analysis that we have, and also a number of other state DOTs are doing the same types of analysis. And so it provides us with ability to estimate against that.
Okay, we've got a little bit of a list going here with members' questions, which is fine, but we will want to get to the bill and other testifiers as well. Representative Tabke, Ream, Olson, Kraft, Spencer Murrah, and then back to Representative Cagle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thanks for everybody. This is a really important topic to be discussing, so it's good to have you guys here, so thank you very much for being here. Before we get too far, I just want to say thanks to Larry, Representative Kraft, for all of his work on this bill to get over the last 2 years to get this where it is, to make sure that we are doing the work to mitigate greenhouse gases into the future on things. And so my questions for you guys are around the assessment side of things. So maybe, Chris, this is more to you. But the questions that I've been getting from counties and cities and other folks about it are about the increases in VMT and how these are mitigated. So like with there's an example sheet here. The 282-169 interchange in Jordan has been used quite a bit for as a example of how this would work. I think it's an unfair example a little bit because it wasn't built for greenhouse mitigation, which is the kind of the goal of this. We want to make sure that we are focusing on and planning for greenhouse gas mitigation going into the future. But how is specifically the VMT increases, reductions, how is that calculated, and how accurate do you expect that to be? Like, what's the basis for that?
Chair, please proceed. Representatives, this is a really important question. This is one that we've spent a great deal of time researching and analyzing from the beginning. And the short answer on this is there are really two methods for us to estimate impacts. You can look at, you can look back at the previous expansion that has happened and what have been the net outcomes from that expansion, and do a statistical analysis on it. The other option is to look into the future and use travel demand models, which we use to make decisions on large projects like this already. And what we have set in the guidance is that in a ideal situation, you would be using both of those methods and comparing the results. I will say that the when you look into the future with the travel demand models,
There are a number of components that a travel demand model does not include. And so that is one of the reasons we have been looking to validate and look back at what actually has happened from real world observed changes in travel behavior. But again, kind of the short answer is using both methods. The related to the interchange analysis, that is probably the area where we're using pretty conservative estimates, because we've been focusing more on these lane adds and how to evaluate those based on what our models are already telling us. I just laid out for you, you got these two different methods. They're both telling you that when you expand the system, you create a net increase in vehicle miles traveled. The difference is kind of what's all getting factored into the analysis.
Okay. We're going to try to keep the questions a little bit more brief and to the point. Same with the questions so that we can continue to move on. Follow up, Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, yeah, that helps a lot with that. Is there – so I'll just ask a two-part question real quick here. One is does that assessment take into account, like, this particular spot, 282-169 in Jordan, it has a ton of freight traffic that goes through there and things. Does the modeling that you're doing take into account the fact that if you're driving a Prius versus driving hauling a load, a semi-truck load of whatever it is it take into account those kinds of things as to what type of traffic is on this? And then secondly, with that, does it take into account local planning as to what's going on for, because Jordan, as much as we all love Jordan, doesn't have as high of a trajectory of growth rate as other places when you put an interchange in. So is that all those factors pulled into this? So thank you.
Mr. Behrens.
Chair, representatives, the short answer is yes.
Okay.
The a key attribute is what John touched upon, which is the EPA's MOVES model. We're on the fifth iteration of that modeling tool that's used across the country, and that is kind of a key way that we're able to do that type of evaluation and have a greater confidence.
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick, and thank you for this presentation. So I am just a little curious about the eligible offsets. You have number six is parking management, and I come from the area where Highway 5 goes through my community, and I've seen, you know, how the plan is to mitigate it by adding bike trails. But I'm kind of curious how parking management would factor in. I know the former chair, Chair Frank Hornstein, he really has talked a lot about the Paved Paradise book. A lot of people are reading that, talking about how we need to maybe reduce the amount of parking we have. But I'm kind of curious how this would work. If you give me an example, that'd be great.
The new chair does like parking. Please proceed briefly.
Chair, representatives, the statutory language focuses on allowing for changing in parking requirements, minimum requirements, and is not necessarily connected to park and ride facilities. It's more focused on changes in what kind of or what's the volume of parking that's required for a given lot and development.
Representative Ream.
Thank you. Yeah, that's all.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, gentlemen. So when you mentioned cost, a couple things. One is if a project can be mitigated by another project, right? So if there is a transit project or a bikeway project ongoing somewhere else on your network, you can mitigate one with another, correct? Okay. And then, Mr. Chair, so I also want to take a step back as we think about cost, because if there is a additional cost on a road-only project, are other things getting built that are moving people around, that are providing transportation services? I mean, we get so focused on road And we're really, I don't believe you're a Department of Roads, you're a Department of Transportation. And so, you know, these, we're talking about a different way of thinking about transportation, where we're thinking about how do we move people most effectively. So I just want to, as we think about cost, that's not like a, this is still moving people, correct?
Mr. Solberg, are we still moving people?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the short answer is transportation projects are multimodal in general. So thinking about main streets, complete streets types of projects, trails, sidewalks, those are all important pieces of transportation project.
Thank you. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question to the testifier about want to build a little bit more on the cost conversation. So we just had a presentation in this committee earlier this week just about the kind of the projected cost for the next 20 years for our road system, had some conversations about how large our road system is, how much we need to do to maintain it. Are there, can we project out any saved costs from this new way of building out our infrastructure, thinking about greenhouse gas? I know that we talked about individual projects may have some mitigation costs, but long term, can we be looking at saved costs in terms of less roads to maintain and things like that? Thank you.
Mr. Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think so we're early in this process right now in developing this, but to think about it shortly, yes, there could be potential savings. I think this is where it comes into a multimodal, a multi-faceted approach to transportation. It isn't just about saving for roads. It's about saving in land use development costs. It's about saving in sanitary and storm sewer costs and water lines. So that's a broader, much broader topic.
Thank you. Any follow-up? Okay. Representative Cagle, you're still on the list, and then we'll go to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was just looking at the transportation, our goal of net zero by 2050. And over the past 10 years, we've reduced 6%. So what's the barrier to us kind of really meeting these goals? I know there's multiple options that we can use, but, you know, really what's going to make it so that we hit these goals?
Go ahead, whoever would like that one.
Chair, representatives, the shorthand on this is related to surface transportation. It really comes down to two primary levers: the carbon intensity of the fuels that are in the vehicles that we're driving around, and then the amount that we are driving around, and whether or not there are transportation options and how well those are connected to the businesses and schools and homes that we need to get to. So it really sits on those two bookends, and those are the main levers that we have. The reason that, folks are going to transition to, maybe I'll just leave it there.
Any follow-up?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think that's really key is, like, this is the land use and the project piece, but we also really need to start thinking about our fuels. And so, I think the Clean Transportation Fuel Standard would really help move us towards, electrifying our system and also making sure that we have Minnesota-grown fuels. And so I would hope that that's also a lever that you guys start to push as well. Because I don't think enough attention has been paid to that. And so I think, if we're going to look at really drastically reducing our emissions, we have to take all the tools out of the toolbox and not just some.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Thank you for your presentation. We will have, we'll introduce the bill. We've got a number of testifiers. And so stick around for questions, and we'll try to get as many member questions. I know I cut some people off the list, but that's the way it is. All right, Representative Olson will take over the gavel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So before we start this bill, I just kind of want to talk about how we're going to run a really narrow track on the discussion here today. We've got a lot of testifiers. We've got a lot of conversations to have. I want us to focus on the merits of this bill, its viability, and I don't want us to run into a battle on this, the concept of climate change, all right? That's going to serve no purpose other than to waste a lot of our time. The conversation is not on climate change. The conversation is on the merits of this bill and the greenhouse gas mitigation plan that we have. Can we all agree on that? Yeah.
Thank you for that. Can we then go into this, assuming that climate change is real?
I don't believe that that assumption is necessary for this discussion. We're going to file on this narrow track. We're going to move forward. Testifiers should keep testimony on point and be efficient with time, as we have numerous testifiers, and there are a lot of questions that we would like to have asked and answered during this time. Mr. Chair, would you like to move your bill?
I would move House File 748 to the General Register.
Would you like to introduce your bill, or should
we move
on to
testifiers? Couple amendments, too. Let's just do the amendments first. I will move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that we wanted, and then there's the A3 amendment that adds a couple of extra details, but let's move the A2 first.
All right. The A2 is an author's amendment. Any discussion on this amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of adopting the author's amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, Mr. Chair, on to the A3.
We will do the A3, and maybe what I'll do is before I even start
my comment. Actually, sorry, Mr. Chair, all those opposed say nay. All right, I think the ayes have it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have the A2 is amended. And then we'll have Mr. Burris maybe walk through if that would be probably appropriate. I will move the A3 amendment as well. Basically, that adds, if I can remember, gives us more time to implement the details and also provides for project exemptions if there's federal dollars that are waiting to be used.
Is there any discussion on this, on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And now all opposed say nay. All right, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
On to the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So upon returning back to the Transportation Committee, where I spent 6 years in the first part of my legislative career and came back, I was approached by a number of stakeholders and constituents that had concerns about the greenhouse gas and vehicle miles traveled requirements in transportation projects. I wasn't fully aware of the depth of the requirements, and so House File 748 is a response to addressing a lot of these concerns that a whole variety of stakeholders have. And so we do understand that cars and trucks that use our transportation infrastructure are contributors to emissions in our state, and we do have a role to play in setting strategy to reduce them. But the new regulations that were put in last biennium put a burden on the state's roads and bridge systems to bear the cost of reducing those emissions without providing necessary funds to offset those mitigations. The law states that if the greenhouse gas and vehicle miles traveled cannot be reduced by rescoping the project, they must be mitigated. And if they can't be mitigated, then the project has to be stopped. There are highway projects across every part of the state that are desperately in need of replacing crumbling infrastructure, eliminating bottlenecks in our communities, and reduce crashes and fatalities. We should not hold these projects hostage to expensive mitigation, and they're, especially when there's no money to pay for them. Also troubling is how this program is being implemented. A lot of the details that we had heard are still being planned out by the Technical Advisory Committee that is being asked to decide both the methodology for assessing the greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled, and also evaluating the sufficiency of the mitigation options. In some cases, there is insufficient data to determine the offsets, especially as it relates to vehicle miles traveled. And if the offsets are required outside the area of the project, who's responsible for coordinating them? There is no structure identified to administer the program if highway expansion projects in Candiohi County needs to pay for transit in Ramsey County. Stakeholders are left wondering how that will work. If the legislature wants to reduce emissions in the transportation sector, it should set out precise language and the funds to implement them. It shouldn't subject infrastructure programs that enhance mobility, support commerce, improve safety to a process that is poorly defined, that it's impractical to execute, and unfunded, in fact, driving up the cost of a lot of these projects by 20 to 40% is what I'm being told. I understand that the undoing of the program is not politically feasible, so this bill narrows the number of projects that would trigger assessments and mitigation since there is no funding. It focuses on greenhouse gas reductions and ensures that the critical safety projects continue if they can't be mitigated. So we need to prioritize safety. We need to better define the process, and we can't exacerbate the funding gap or jeopardize federal funds that are needed in the state for our transportation systems. We can move to testifiers, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll now move on to testifiers. The first one that we have on the list is the Executive Director of MOVE Minnesota, I believe Elisa Schufman. Thank you for being here today. Would you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony?
And Mr. Chair, I would queue up the other testifiers to
Roger.
Come so we can.
Next on the testimony will be Barb Weckman Brecky, the Scott County Commissioner.
Thank you, Representative Olson, Chair Kosnick, members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Schuffman. I'm the Interim Executive Director at MOVE Minnesota Action. In 2015, I was bicycling when I was T-boned by the driver of an SUV who ran a red light on Highway 51 in St. Paul, also known as Snelling Avenue. I remember only flashes, turning to see the headlights, lying on the pavement as a witness checked to see if I was alive, the paramedics in the ambulance cutting the clothes off my body while I screamed in pain. I was hospitalized with a traumatic brain injury, and a decade later, I still suffer chronic pain and have flashbacks when car headlights shine in my eyes. And I sit here as one of the lucky ones. I'm here today because traffic safety is not at odds with ensuring our infrastructure gives people more choices in how they get around. The dad who nearly killed me with his car was running late to get his kid to hockey practice. If his kid had been able to grab a bus, I wouldn't need to be here reliving that crash today. When we think about wellness, we need to think beyond traffic crashes as well, about people who get asthma from highway pollution, the kids who can't walk to a friend's house because their parents worry they'll be hit, and the generations who will struggle with the devastation of climate breakdown and wonder why we didn't do everything we could when we had the chance. Analysis from RMI has found that reducing the amount people drive by 20% per capita by 2050 would prevent 2,800 road deaths, 42,000 injuries, and avert an additional 20,000 deaths through health improvements by 2050, saving us $54 billion in comprehensive costs for the state and taxpayers. The law as it exists is a safety law, and this new bill exempting projects under the guise of safety is misguided. However we get around, increasing walking, biking, and transit increases safety in our communities. People can't crash a car they're not driving. I ask that you vote against the bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. After the Scott County Commissioner, we're going to have the Anoka County Commissioner, Julie Jepson. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Barb Weckman Brecky, a Scott County Commissioner. Today I'm representing not only Scott County, but also the Minnesota Intercounty Association and the Association of Minnesota Counties. Though I will use Scott County examples today in my testimony, we can find similar examples across the state of Minnesota. Thanks to Representative Tabke for preparing for my examples today. Scott County is a growing county, with communities expected to see population increases by 2050, ranging from 43% to 116%. We know we need to be mindful as we plan for this growth, especially when it comes to mitigating the impacts of climate change. We share and respect the concerns that sparked this legislation. However, we are concerned that the cost of implementing the new greenhouse gas and vehicle miles traveled assessments and mitigation requirements will stifle critically needed highway safety and capacity improvements. Our concerns have heightened as the Technical Advisory Committee begins to work out the details for the program's implementation and defines how to measure greenhouse gas and vehicle miles traveled and the impacts and the alternatives and costs to offset them. When the TAC reviewed an in-progress interchange in Scott County in Jordan, Minnesota, and modeled the impacts and mitigation, the results were extremely concerning. While greenhouse gases are expected to decrease once the stoplights are removed and the project is completed, and thousands of vehicles, many of which are semis and heavy-duty trucks, no longer need to stop, idle, and rev back up, the induced demand model estimates that vehicle miles traveled through the project area will increase over the next 20 years due to the increased traffic flow. This is somewhat expected due to growth, but the MnDOT model shows a net increase in greenhouse gas emissions over the existing congested conditions. the TAC metrics estimate that to offset the increase in emissions, the county would need to build 68 miles of bike trails, a mitigation effort that is estimated to cost $34 million. Another option would be 225 miles of sidewalk at a cost of $22.5 million. That's almost 40% of the cost of the entire project. To add context to this specific example, this project is building 1.28 miles of new trail around the interchange, as well as an underpass that will allow residents of a manufactured home community to access local schools and shopping. This expensive piece of infrastructure is much more likely to contribute to greenhouse gas reduction than just building the trails. And we really are moving people much better than we used to. Even in my duration as an elected official, we are moving people much better. In our growing areas, what we're really trying to prevent is the conflict between the semis, all of the freight hauling the goods and services, goods, not services, in and out of the Twin City Metro. This is very personal to me. Just 2 weeks ago, I was on the phone with my aunt, and she says, I got to go. It looks like Matt and Claire were in an accident. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And later, I find out it was at this intersection. There's very few of us in the area who have not had family members in accidents at this intersection because of the heavy, heavy freight traffic through there. So we are moving people. We are doing better. And even though we need to continue, we want that to be thoughtful, and we need it to be to work for all of us. So now I went off script. The engineers are looking at me. The interchange project I mentioned and described begs another question. Why do increases in vehicle miles traveled need to be mitigated in addition to the greenhouse gases? The VMT measure already calculates GHG emission increases, which require the mitigation. We feel like this creates a double hit and is something we should look at and analyze further. In addition to VMT mitigation being virtually impossible in a growing county, there is no established way to reduce VMT at a project level. This could essentially stop any trunk highway project that reduces congestion and improves safety. For this reason, we appreciate that the proposal before you removes vehicle miles traveled from being assessed. And we'd also like to share support for removing interchanges from the GHG requirements altogether. We have aging infrastructure in our county and many other counties that need to be replaced, maybe not even expanded, but just replaced. So we thank Representative Kosnick for bringing this bill forward and look forward to working with all of you on this committee to address climate change in ways that enhance mobility, safety, and transportation options without adding exorbitant costs to a system that is already underfunded. We really want to work with you to find the right solution and make sure we can properly fund this solution. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. After the next commissioner, we'll have Joe McPherson, who's the Anoka County Engineer, speak. And I'd like to remind the testifiers to be efficient and brief with your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us here today. My name is Julie Jepson. I'm an Anoka County Commissioner representing the great cities of Blaine and Spring Lake Park. In 2017, MnDOT conducted its every five-year study on the most dangerous and deadly intersections in the seven-county metro. Findings from that study show that five of the six most dangerous and deadly intersections in the seven-county metro are on one road, one trunk highway, right in the middle of my district. This corridor has over eight times more 911 calls than the state average. There's more than 35,000 vehicles that travel on this corridor daily, which equates to about the same number of vehicles as its neighbor to the east of 35W. If you could imagine for me a minute, driving on 35W with a stoplight every half mile to a mile. There are three things from the 2023 legislation that I'd like to highlight today. The first highlight must be my sincere gratitude, first and foremost. The 2023 Minnesota legislature, including many of you here today, invested in over $100 million for the first of three phases of essential improvements, grade-separated intersections, roundabouts, safe bike ped lanes, and much more along this corridor that I just spoke about. This pivotal investment pushed us across the finish line for fully funding over $200 million. The first phase of Trunk Highway 65 improvements will begin next spring. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Second, the 2023 legislature created the Advisory Council of Traffic Safety. One of the representing entities, as outlined in state statute, is the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC appointed me to represent the 87 counties on that advisory council in their role. I've spent the last 2 years learning the leading causes of crashes and what we can do as a collective system to change human behavior with the ultimate goal of towards zero deaths. As you can imagine, there is a lot of work to be done considering that over 470 individuals died on Minnesota roads last year, and thus far this year, there have been 29 deaths. I hope you agree with me, but one is one too many. The third and final thing that I'd like to highlight is the reason why we're here today. Updates to the original 2023 statute through House File 748 are essential. Growing communities like Anoka County, like Scott County, like Otter Tail County, like Blue Earth County, and St. Louis County cannot keep our community safe while simultaneously having one hand tied behind our backs with the requirements outlined in the original legislation. The first two legislative highlights I mentioned, the $100 million funding for Phase 1 on Trunk Highway 65 and the creation of the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety, mean absolutely nothing if House File 748 is not passed. I cannot understand how it makes sense to make a massive investment on a trunk highway project while simultaneously creating legislation that requires mitigation, increasing the overall project cost 20 to 40%. And whose responsibility is that to secure that unfunded option? It's counties and cities. It's the local entity. And the only revenue source we have at our fingertips is property tax. Your constituents and my constituents. I also cannot understand how safety is a high priority while simultaneously and intentionally excluding safety as a consideration in the trunk highway expansion project. Other elected officials, state, county, and city engineers, public safety officers, and other experts in transportation have tried for 2 years to get this legislation reasonably updated. We all acknowledge and understand that greater efforts need to be made towards reducing greenhouse gas. We acknowledge and understand that this work is not simple, nor is it easy. We acknowledge and understand through House File 748, we can work towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions while also prioritizing safety of our constituents. Unfortunately, I had to make a last-minute correction, or excuse me, addition to my testimony this afternoon. Yesterday at about 1:30 in the afternoon, there was yet another crash on Trunk Highway 65. North of the section that you funded in 2023, but included in the funding that Anoka County is requesting this session. A vehicle going northbound ran a light and struck another vehicle, resulting in, thankfully, a non-life-threatening injury to both the driver and a passenger, but there was a child in the car who was also uninjured as well. Future projects like the one yesterday will will not exist, guaranteed 100% will not exist if House File 748 goes through. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. The next one after Mr. McPherson will be Zachary Johnson, the city engineer of the city of Lakeville. Mr. McPherson, would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe McPherson. I'm the Chief Officer of Transportation and County Engineer for Anoka County. I know many of you from past testimonies on this bill. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association, as well as just a rep for our local area in Anoka County and our partners at the city and MnDOT, who are actively looking at projects right now on our trunk highway system to improve safety, mobility, reduce congestion, and there's a lot of different elements that we look at on these highway improvement projects. So with that said, I do want to acknowledge the work that's been done over the last couple of years. Representative Kraft has been willing to listen to us on modifications to the bill, both in 23 and 24, and then also to our partners at MnDOT who have been spearheading the working group that took place in late 23 to early 24, and then now the TAC, or the Technical Advisory Committee, is underway looking at different elements to this, what is the assessment process, and all of that. And that's a lot of work, and there's a long ways to go. You heard earlier about the different assessment tools. They did run evaluations on a couple spot projects, and so in your handout today, you guys have a one-pager that looks like this. Not only was that Scott County project on Trunk Highway 169 and Highway 282 looked at, but we also had another TAC member, Lyndon Robgent, who unfortunately couldn't make it today but wanted to be here, and I wanted to express that. He also looked at his active Highway 5 project to take a look at that, run the evaluation, and see what those numbers would be. And you can see that staggering number. It's approximately 33%, 35% of the project cost and additional offsets, depending on which ones you choose. So these are real numbers that we're up against. And as a practitioner in this arena, we weigh and measure and balance a lot of different interests from the community. When you hear about complete streets, when you hear about trunk highway projects versus local projects, we always look at, there's a ton of attributes that we look at. It's safety. How does it impact the community? How does access work? What are the health benefits to the community? Are businesses able to thrive? Are we able to get people to and from in an efficient manner? And so all those things play a part in that. And so with that, I wanted to talk a little bit about the bill that's before you and the amendments that were put together. First, we support the removal of the VMT requirement that's included in the current legislation. And the reason I bring that up is we haven't really talked much about that aspect of this current legislation. It's twofold. It's not only the reduction of greenhouse gases, it's also a reduction of the VMT per capita. So a lot of times it gets clouded with just that greenhouse gas aspect. But the reason I bring that up, Commissioner Jepson had mentioned that Trunk Highway 65 is now fully funded. Luckily, it made it in the STIP before this came into play. The good news is that project, as designed, will significantly reduce greenhouse gases to the tune of almost 50,000 metric tons over the course of its life. Unfortunately, when you look at the VMT side of things, it increases it by about 40,000 miles over the course. So actually, it's a bigger number than that. But the VMT would go up. And part of that is it's pulling that regional traffic that wants to be on the trunk highway back to the regional highway and off of those local roads. You heard the testimony about getting hit on a bike. We hear about those a lot, and they're very hard. They're gut-wrenching. And so getting the regional traffic off those local roads onto regional systems is important to minimize those situations. Secondly, we support the extension of implementation dates on this. So you heard from our partners at MnDOT that they're working towards getting the implementation processes in place and making sure that they're ready to go and that they're reputable and repeatable. I think the proposal of moving that out approximately 4 years is a good idea. Provide time for us to come up with an analysis tool to make sure that it works. It's something that's defendable. It's something that is replicable and also fits all the different community types that are within the state of Minnesota. It's not a one-size-fits-all. And lastly here, supportive of the safety exemptions. We don't want to pit different goals around the state against each other. But as Commissioner Jepson had mentioned, it's very important that we don't lose sight of the safety impacts. I know right now we're working with Representative Cagle. She has a corridor just outside her front door where a number of pedestrians have died over the last 5 to 6 years, almost 10. So that is something that's very serious. Likely some of the solutions to that is a grade separation. And looking at this, if you're looking at 20 to 40% more cost, that's something we would have to own, and then we'd have to figure out who delivers that, how do we deliver it, what is the funding mechanism, and so forth. So again, I do support the proposed bill and the amendments on behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association and as an Anoka County representative. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. I think that that sheet has 21 different organizations that are listed on it in endorsing that, so I appreciate you providing that to us. The next one will be Zachary Johnson with Margaret Donahoe, as the Minnesota Transportation Alliance will be on deck. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I didn't know it was Lakeville Day. I didn't know our city engineer was going to be here, but I'm proud to have him here with us.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Zach Johnson, Lakeville City Engineer. This afternoon, I'm speaking on behalf of the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. With respect to your time and consideration, we share a lot of the ideas and opinions of the organizations you referenced in that letter, and as County Engineer McPherson just shared. So I may try to be brief in some of my comments here in effort to keep things moving today. But on behalf of the City Engineers, we too want to share our support for House File 748. We'd like to highlight a few elements of the bill. One, as you heard today, is the elimination of the vehicle miles traveled assessment and mitigation. It's a difficult tool to measure and quantify, and it's difficult to understand its reliability in selecting and prioritizing and programming capital improvement projects. Therefore, it's really difficult to include those as a tool. Number two, it reflects true project costs. The cost of offsetting greenhouse gases is expensive. You've heard that today. Mitigation options have a capital cost through the production of materials, the transportation of materials, and the installation of those materials. And they subsequently are an asset with operation and maintenance costs. And although in some instances the maintenance becomes the responsibility of property owners, in instances such as snow and ice removal from sidewalks, it does become a cost that cities have to account for. The greenhouse gases exist, and they do, whether the interchanges are constructed or not, and those mitigation measures have merit on their own. The third is it allows cities to deliver necessary safety improvements and critical transportation infrastructure without added costs or delays. Cities have existing interchanges that are aging and insufficient in design and capacity, which contributes to significant congestion, which we've heard today, and it also in need of safety improvements as evidenced by crash rates. Generating funds to plan, design, build, and maintain interchanges takes several years, in some instances over between 10 to 12. Additional costs that extend beyond the immediate project need ultimately delay or prevent those critical projects from being completed. It is essential for cities that we provide the infrastructure that fosters commerce, protects our public health, and supports the safe and efficient movement of people and goods. As you've heard from our testifiers today, I too want to emphasize that as cities, we understand the impact of greenhouse gases in our communities. And to that point, I'd like to take just a moment to highlight a few of those initiatives that are being already implemented consistent with the mitigation measures that Mr. Sobel referenced as approved by the legislature. One is an investment in transit expansion and service. Cities and businesses are already partnering with organizations to improve accessibility and mobility through the construction of mobility hubs and services such as microtransit and vanpooling. Two, investments in active transportation and infrastructure. Multimodal elements focused on the safety, comfort, and convenience of pedestrians and bicyclists, as well as connectivity to destinations, are standard features on our local and regional transportation projects. And third, natural systems. Cities are already investing in renewable energy by offsetting energy costs through subscriptions to solar panel projects, adding electric vehicles to fleets, and implementing reforestation programs. In addition, cities are also reducing waste and/or energy production through city construction standards that support the use of sustainable materials through recycled materials and also construction methods like reuse and reclamation. I'd like to close in thanking our partnering organizations, members of the Greenhouse Gases Working Group, and legislators for promoting helpful ideas and information and working constructively to improve the greenhouse gas assessment process. Investing in local and regional transportation projects provide the connectivity that helps create a sense of community and belonging where people feel safe traveling to and from. Ultimately, as public servants, we have an obligation to and are measured by our ability to deliver transportation projects that provide the high quality of life our residents and businesses have grown accustomed to and expect. City Engineers Association of Minnesota remains committed to working with all of you in delivering this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. After the Minnesota Transportation Alliance, we'll have the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Ms. Donahoe, would you state your name for the record and continue with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe, Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Our members advocate for improvements to Minnesota's transportation system that will make it safer and more effective for residents and businesses while creating family-sustaining careers in transportation. We know that the increase in severe weather incidents is having an impact on the state's infrastructure. Climate issues will continue to affect many elements of our transportation system, including road and bridge washouts,
droughts impacting water resources, high heat impacting maintenance, and overall impacts to design, construction, and materials. So we understand the importance of reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector as we work to make our infrastructure stronger and more resilient. But our members have concerns about the workability of the current law regarding the greenhouse gas emissions and VMT assessments on trunk highway projects. We believe that safety should be the number one priority. Traffic crashes and fatalities are not going in the right direction in recent years. In 2024, there were 478 fatalities on Minnesota roadways. In 2023, 402. And in 2022, 444. We know that the majority of fatalities occur on two-lane roadways where there's little room for driver error. Lane expansion is important for improving safety and mobility on highways that were simply not designed for the traffic levels that we see today. We believe the state should be doing everything it can to reduce crashes and fatalities, and that policies should be focused on making it easier and less expensive to fix high crash intersections and roadway segments. The state is struggling just to maintain the transportation system we have today. And as you've heard, 70% of MnDOT's construction budget will be used for maintenance of the existing system. Of the $36.7 billion planned in investments over the next 20 years on the trunk highway system, only $1.2 billion of that is planned for highway capacity. With a $1.1 billion per year funding gap on the trunk highway system, there's very little investment in highway capacity, but where there is, it is very important. The increased cost of trunk highway projects, whether by adding additional elements to a project or simply delaying the project, will only increase the ongoing funding shortfall. Funding for mitigation efforts is a challenge, but we are encouraged by suggestions such as looking at increasing the EV annual fee and dedicating some of that funding to mitigation efforts. Many of the offsets cannot and should not be paid for with trunk highway funds, so alternative revenue sources will be needed. Providing additional mitigation options can also give different areas of the state the opportunity to find the most cost-effective way to offset GHG emissions. We appreciate the work done in 2024 to improve the assessment process. As the Technical Advisory Committee develops the methodology to measure and offset highway impacts, we want to work with you to make the process more workable so that the state can both improve safety on our highways and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Mr. Lee, would you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Chair Olson and Chair Kosnick. My name is Darren Lee with Flaherty and Hood here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities today. The CGMC is a nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy organization representing more than 100 cities outside of the metropolitan area. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 748, which makes revisions to the transportation greenhouse gas impact assessment legislation passed in 2023 and that just went into effect in February. So we became involved in this issue 2 years ago when this impact assessment legislation was first proposed. And we support the goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector. However, we found this legislation alarming for several reasons. Our organization has long been an advocate for critical highway projects in Greater Minnesota that improve traffic safety and boost economic activity. We could see that the law had the potential to make those projects extremely difficult, if not impossible, to deliver. Using Highway 14, for example, this was a project that received corridors of commerce funds and took many years and effort and advocacy to complete. To convert this dangerous two-lane highway into a four-lane was only completed after too many fatal accidents. In Greater Minnesota, highways are the lifeblood that connects our communities. Had this legislation been in place at the time, that project likely would not have gone forward, or at a minimum would have been much more difficult and costly to complete. Other projects, you've heard a few other examples, so I won't repeat them, but just a couple others where this either would or would either would have or will apply: 252 and I-94 in Brooklyn Park, and Highway 36 and 120 in North St. Paul. You heard about the example in Jordan, and then Highway 5 in Victoria. Just, you know, to add some context, the 127 miles of bike paths, that would be like the Gateway Trail from St. Paul to Stillwater is 18 miles. That'd be seven more Gateway Trails to Stillwater. So, you know, where are we going to put all this infrastructure, and is it wanted, is it needed? It's become increasingly clear as I've attended the working group and now the technical advisory committee meetings that the law creates complexity that is impractical to administer. It's not clear how mitigation will be managed, who will be responsible for the mitigation projects, how it will be delivered, where it will be built, how it's quantified, what it will cost, and who will pay for it. And many of those mitigation options are not effective in greater Minnesota. With no state funding currently available for mitigation, our fear is that projects will be halted as provided in the statute. Mitigation-focused projects, such as increased transit and bike paths, the law envisions will likewise not move forward because neither will be built. So once again, we support efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector, but the statute is flawed, and what is needed is a balanced approach to transportation that brings down greenhouse gases emissions, protects the environment, meets the needs of all Minnesotans, ensuring safety and economic growth. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Seeing no further testifiers, let's begin our questions of member questions. First one on the list is Representative, soon-to-be co-chair, Cagle.
Mr. Chair, there might be some members from the public that are interested in speaking.
All right. We have a testifier. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Peter Wiginius. I'm legislative director for Sierra Club. I'd like to reaffirm the testimony provided by Alyssa Schuffman from Move Minnesota. It is a false choice to suggest that safety is at odds with greenhouse gas and VMT goals. I want to share the good news with this committee that there is a younger generation of engineers who understand that and are not intimidated by obeying this law. It's also false to suggest that our roads were being designed for safety up until the greenhouse gas VMT law passed. Many of our roads were being designed for speed and maximum vehicle throughput, often at the expense of safety. And we have the collision statistics to show that. The types of roadway design that most often increase safety are often identical to the designs that would help reduce emissions. The solution to any challenges of implementation described here is to give MnDOT the flexibility to invest dollars in the ways that make sense to them. I understand, and I said this last year, why folks might be reluctant to provide MnDOT with maximum flexibility over the use of trunk highway dollars, but the alternative can't be to give them no flexibility. It's not an accident that every example of alternatives provided today is being expressed in miles of bike trails. A small step in the right direction would be to allow trunk highway dollars to be used just for the capital costs of highway bus rapid transit projects on MnDOT highways, which would clearly meet the constitutional test of highway purpose. Earlier in my career, I worked on the epic quest to reconstruct 35W, incorporating bus rapid transit project from Minneapolis to Burnsville. And how long did it take? I recall Mayor Ryback and Governor Pawlenty discussing MnDOT's funding application with President Bush as they toured the wreckage of the 35W bridge in 2007. President Bush did approve that funding, but it shouldn't take nearly 20 years and a bridge collapse to build a BRT line. It did because of all the different funding streams that needed to be lined up. I submit that providing flexibility to MnDOT to obey the law is a better path than undoing it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and thank you, Representative Kraft, for stopping, slowing me down a little bit. We'll move on to member questions as long as – oh, we're leaving. Okay. So
Bye,
move on to member questions. Soon to be co-chair Cagle, question to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just kind of really confused by the amendments. You know, we're functionally taking out any positive outcomes that are related with the greenhouse gas mitigation program, but and like stripping the fact that with this language, almost no projects would qualify for the greenhouse gas emission funding, but yet we're leaving all the administrative cost and burden on MnDOT. So that's something that's really confusing to me. I also just wanted to kind of
talk about some of the stuff. You know, we really need to think bigger about our communities. I think this is really narrow-minded when we're saying that safety and cost is more important than a holistic, healthy environment. You know, we need to look at making every aspect of our lives better, not just making sure we can go 70 up 65 all the way to Ham Lake. And then I also, you know, every day we have deaths attributed to particulate matter in our air, which is, you know, pollution from cars. We had 90 deaths in Anoka County due to asthma. Let me see. And I was just looking at Anoka County. So here, and I know that Commissioner Jepson and I have had some conversations about some of the really hard cuts that the counties are going to have to face when it comes to Medicaid and Medicare. And so this is one of the things that I think we can actually do that will help that, because just in Anoka County itself, there was 90 deaths related to fine particulates. There was cardiopulmonary death rate, 63 in Anoka County, and that's just in 1 year. And then increased hospitalizations due to particulates in the air. And so I think, you know, we really need to look at that aspect too, is that this is not only going to help mitigate, but it's also going to cut costs for the county when they don't have to pay for all those medical costs. And then it just kind of also makes me think that we don't want to do hard things. You know, we gave Metro counties 26% of the TAA and 17% of the Metro sales tax for transportation issues. So that was a huge increase to a lot of the counties. And so if this is something that, you know, they're saying they can't do, maybe we, you know, redirect that money to MnDOT, because it sounds like they're prepared and willing to do the work. And so I just really want to, you know, state that I want to live in Wakanda, not Mad Max area. And so, like, that's my goal, is let's get us to Wakanda and not be fighting over water in Mad Max. So thank you.
Thank you for the reference to Mad Max. Mr. Chair, any response?
Well, I just remind the committee kind of a lot of the testimony. You know, if we don't fix some of these intersections and do work on these projects, you know, I come from a very large growing community. When we don't do these projects, on my way to work right on the interstate, you see cars sitting there idling, thousands of cars every day. By doing these projects, we allow more movement and less emissions. And, you know, if you want to redirect some of the sales tax money to help build roads, I've got a bill for you. So I think it's important.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next question is going to Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been hearing a lot about greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled. I was wondering if you can explain how you measure those things and how it applies to a project, and hopefully it's not how they measure ridership on a train.
Let's see, who would that would be a good question for the MnDOT GHG Impact Assessment Director, potentially, Chris Behrens.
Mr. Behrens, and I think one of the county engineers that's been working on it probably has.
Mr. McPherson, would that be your answer too?
And I would just add, Mr. Chair, if I can, you know, to the question, that's part of the reason why we're pushing this out a little bit, so we can figure out some of these questions a little bit more solidly as well.
All right. So to the question, can we make it as quick as we possibly can? We're running out of time. So we'll start with MnDOT. Mr. Behrens, would you please answer?
Chair, representatives, how we measure? Is that the question? How we measure is, we talked about this earlier, the existing methodologies that we have are the carbon emissions tool that we've been using for the last couple of years, and draw the analogy around crash modification factors. What's the best research say happens if you do X, Y, and Z? And then applying that methodology to estimate emissions reduction.
And Mr. McPherson, can you answer that question quick?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, or Representative. So in regards to that, he's correct. We have tools out there that measure the greenhouse gas. You can estimate based on the project, the future traffic volumes and that type of thing. Then you apply, like he said, like crash modification factors. It's similar with the carbon emission factors that you apply to the different types of traffic and traffic that rolls through there. So that's the way they measure it. And then from there, you got to come up with a way that you're going to mitigate that.
Thank you, Mr. McPherson. Can you gentlemen please stay up there? I think we've got a number of questions for you. Next on the list, we're going to have Representative Joy, then Representative Jones, then Representative Murphy, then Representative Kraft. Unless you want to do Representative Kraft first? Perfect. Then we'll do it that way. Representative Joy, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question I have is MnDOT has an assessment which was supposed to be done February 1st, you know, for the greenhouse gas. Is that done? Either one of you can take that or whoever wants to take that.
Mr. Behrens.
Chair, representatives, yes, we had the technical advisory committee added to this process starting in the fall, and so we have been having them meet every month. They are folks that have their own jobs, so we can't have them working on this every day. So, but they're the key group that the legislature had identified to shepherd this process, and they do have an assessment procedure drafted, and we will have that published this month.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you. So it wasn't done February 1st, and our understanding is the assessment criteria must be used for every project going forward, so we're kind of delayed now because of that's not – it's going to be submitted, but it's not there yet, correct?
Mr. Behrens.
Chair, representatives, the Commissioner Solberg touched upon this. We have done an audit of our projects. There was a delayed effect for this to go forward. The projects that are in the STIP currently, STIPs and TIP, currently are not subject, and we have none that are on the horizon right now that would be. As we noted, there is, as we estimate, you know, between 3 to 6 projects on an annual basis that this impacts.
Thank you. Next question, we have Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think we need to take a little step back here. What we are talking about is systemic change, right? You know, we need to reduce and eventually eliminate greenhouse gases from transportation. That means, as we heard before, electrifying and reducing VMT. You have to address the fuels you use and the amount you travel. You need to do both. We're not on track. So anytime you're making systemic change, the system fights back, whether it knows it or not. But here's how you know the system is fighting back. Many comments made today, we support the goals, but using examples from the past and saying this project in the past would be different. The point of this is the rethinking, is to look forward, and as we plan projects, to plan them in a way that actually is consistent with safety on the roads and safety for our kids and grandchildren and safety in terms of less people dying on our roads. We can do all of them, but it requires rethinking. So there's been a lot of discussion about vehicle miles traveled. So Chair Kosnick, do you know what the benefits, other than climate perspective, are of reaching vehicle miles traveled goals? Vehicle miles traveled goals.
Chair Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, I have watched the previous testimony when the bill was being introduced about 2 years ago, and there was less discussion about the mitigation efforts that are driving the cost 20 to 40% up, and more discussion to your answer, to your question, about the social cost of carbon and some things like that. So I am familiar with some of that. What I think the issue is that, to the other question of Representative Fogelman, is the mitigation factors to offset vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions. The mitigation, you could build 5 miles of sidewalk or 127 miles of sidewalk, in fact, on one particular project, but that doesn't necessarily equate that you're going to reduce an equal amount of greenhouse gas emissions just because people are going to walk on it. I support walking trails and bike trails. I have a dog, and I enjoy being outside as much as I can when we're not here, but that doesn't mean that I'm trading that off from
driving somewhere. And so I think that's the missing correlation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow-up, Representative Kraft.
Yes. So you didn't answer the question, but I will. Reduce, separate from greenhouse gas emissions, carbon, reducing vehicle miles traveled saves lives. A study done by Rocky Mountain Institute indicates that if we start hitting on our path to do it, we'll be saving 65 lives per year, starting in 2030, and 1,000 injuries per year. So it saves lives. It also saves money. $91 billion by 2050 if we can hit our 20% reduction per capita. This comes from reduced car costs, reduced injury and death costs, and health improvement. The other thing it does is it saves time. We don't need a time tax on people. You know, we talk about safety. MnDOT's mission is to connect and serve all people through a safe, equitable, and sustainable transportation system. Their number one value is recognizing safety as core to their work and can build it into everything they do. And I would like to ask MnDOT, does this law prevent you from addressing road safety concerns?
Mr. Behrens, please answer quickly.
Chair, representatives, MnDOT has stated before that we can implement this legislation and evaluate impacts and offsets, and we can do that in the context of our other goals as outlined by the legislature.
Thank you for that. So here's the deal, everyone. We're at time, but there's another committee here at 3 o'clock. So I want us to move really, really quickly here because I want us to get to a vote. We have to get this to the general register. But real quick, I didn't get to ask my question that I wanted.
Mr. Chair, I still have a brief
A third follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Kraft, your third 30-second follow-up, quick.
Yeah. So this is a false choice. And another way that you can know is we actually have been doing a process like this for 30 years, something called wetlands mitigation. If a road project is going to impact wetlands, it must be mitigated. We've been doing that. There's been no safety exemption. We know how to do this. We've been doing it for 30 years. The real key thing here is it's the rethinking. Do we have a Department of Transportation or a Department of Roads and Cars? And so one of the things I do appreciate, Chair Kozik, is you saying at the outset that you were interested in addressing these things and addressing greenhouse gas emissions. So I look forward to that in the future, but it's not this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kraft. I actually am authoring that wetland replacement bill. So my real quick question, we're looking at a 30% increase in cost, a $20 billion funding gap, and 30% of $20 billion is $6 billion. Now, to MDOT, who's responsible for delivering the mitigation when outside of a community? Who's going to pay for them, and who coordinates that? Please answer that really loaded question as quickly as you can.
Chair, representatives, in the legislation, there is not an explicit declaration of who owns and manages the offsets, though the legislature did create a offset mitigation account to be a vehicle for addressing that question.
Thank you for that. All right, there's been a roll call requested on this bill. The committee legislative assistant will call the roll. This is going to the general register. That's the vote.
Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion for House File number 748 to the General Register.
Thank
Please
you.
Proceed with the roll.
As amended, Mr. Chair. Thank you much.
Chair Kozik?
Aye.
Vice Chair Myers?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Berg?
No.
Representative Fogelman?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Jones?
Hell no.
Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Kraft?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Ream?
No.
Representative Sensamura?
No.
Representative Scraba?
Yes.
Representative Tapke?
No.
There being 8 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is moved on to the general register as amended. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone.